Welcome to Friday morning, day three. The final day today. We're going to get moving on our presentations this morning. My name is Tony Provenzano. I'm Director of Clinical Services for SuperValu Pharmacy and a member of the board for ACP. The purpose of this session this morning is to receive brief reports from the work groups for Objective 1. Each workgroup facilitator has been asked to take no more than 10 minutes to summarize his or her group's discussions. They'll be talking about their findings, giving a bit of background and flavor to the findings and the discussions that happened in your sessions, and then talking a little bit about the recommendations that came from those. The organizational affiliations of the facilitators are noted in the conference roster, so I won't be going through those right now. And at the end, please hold all questions for the end. We'll be having hopefully some time at the end for Q&A. And then with that, I'd like to introduce the presenters for today, or the facilitators. Our first presenter will be Dennis Helling, followed by Sandy Zito, Susan Meyer, Mario Mobley-Smith, and then Chris Bradbury. So without further ado, I'd like to ask Dennis to come up to the podium.
Good morning, everybody. Okay. I had the pleasure of representing the A team. Okay, so would all the A team please stand and be recognized? A team, let's stand and be recognized. Okay. All right, the rest of you teams, I tell you, you're in trouble.
Wait a minute, the
A team
is coming.
Oh. Our group really did have some enjoyable dialogue and conversation, a little debate. And we identified about a half a dozen issues or findings for the two questions. And let me review those two questions again. What are the top competencies for current practice that you believe should require additional attention in PharmD education? So not surprising, the first theme was about communication skills. The second was about healthcare systems. And what we meant with healthcare systems is that students need to know how the overall system works and how reimbursement occurs, because when they're in a community pharmacy and they think about, okay, I'm going to be counseling patients, but in fact, when they encounter that patient, the patient first leads with a card. It's an insurance card. So we were talking about they need to understand about Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance programs. We also identified the theme of managerial skills, and not that they become proficient in fiscal and personnel issues, but we wanted them to be exposed to the general concepts that supervisors and managers need to deal with on a daily basis. Professionalism and advocacy. Professionalism, advocacy for patients, and advocacy for the profession. We identified that a common feeling amongst our group was that we're not looking to make our PharmD students researchers, but they need to understand the scientific principles and how research designs are, what are good research designs, and when they evaluate the literature and advise physicians about treatment options. We address the theme of health promotion and wellness and substance abuse, and making sure that our students have the ability to recognize and address certain issues regarding abuse and addiction, both of patients but also health professionals. And the second theme of what should the colleges and schools do to address these competencies, again, another half dozen or so, we focused a lot of attention on the experiential education. And do we have enough structure? Is it the right length? Is it of the highest quality? We had active dialogue about the active learning skills in didactic instruction, and are we designing our courses and have faculty engagement to make sure that there's appropriate use of technology but active learning strategies in the classroom. We talked about recruitment. We wanted to make sure that there were adequate resources and development activities for adjunct faculty and preceptors. We came to a strong consensus about 4 years is just right. Okay? 4 years is just right. The comment was made. As long as we're focusing on pharmacy, when we start trying to slam into those 4 years more and more and more, then we have a problem. And so we summarized the last point in terms of encouraging students for professional involvement and leadership. Another half dozen recommendations then came from our group, and they were not difficult to achieve. ACPE should, and it was talking about encouraging ACP to reevaluate the standards on communication skills and also being very concrete in terms of reexamining the continuum of experiential education, being open to looking at a continuum and the artificial classification that we have with IPPEs and APPEs. Another area of recommendation would be strengthening the standards for pedagogy. And we had active dialogue about making sure that we had active learning and collaboration amongst our students. We talked about raising the expectations of schools to encourage high-quality preceptor development. We have so much of the curriculum that is being farmed out to preceptors who oftentimes have not been adequately developed and trained. They're great preceptors, but sometimes they feel adrift from the school in terms of how to do their preceptor work. We did have dialogue and encouraged ACP to look at the pre-professional entrance requirements and how we're going to manage those 4 years and what do we need to take care of before the students get to that the pharmacy curriculum. And then finally, we had a very nice blend of practitioners and academicians, and so we were very specific in terms of a recommendation to ACP to make sure that there's adequate dialogue with employer groups of pharmacists, to make sure that we in the academy are preparing students for what the jobs are requiring of our students. And that's the report for Group A.
Good morning again. Group B, please stand now that Dennis has set a precedent. Woo! Thank you. It's when you have, when Plan A fails, you have Plan B. That's us. But seriously, I've been put in a very fortunate position to be able to represent. Peggy's putting the mute button on, I can see, to represent some very, very forward-thinking and very, very intelligent and wise leaders of the profession. And our task was to identify competencies for the future of practice and the future pharmacists, and then how colleges and schools of pharmacy should address these areas and what those implications of those findings and conclusions would be for ACPE standards. And it's almost impossible for me to summarize all the great thoughts that came out, and I'm going to try and just condense this into something that you've heard in the last day and a half from other speakers and speakers that could express these a lot better than I can. So our discussion really included identification of some new competencies as well as some expectations of a need for increased emphasis on competencies that are already, we're already giving our students. And I can list them. We've got about nine that, that you probably know about, but patient assessment, an increased emphasis on patient assessment, health informatics and clinical reasoning. It's not just to be a good critical thinker, but you've got to be able to think in the clinical setting, be able to use your knowledge, to use health information for the good of our patients. Safety and quality of drug use, leadership. I mean, it's very important for our future of the profession to have leaders come out of our schools, leaders like you, okay, who's going to take your place, who's going to come up and set the new standards for practice down the road. Our graduates have to be patient-centered. Okay? That means that the patient then becomes a member of the healthcare team, not just the object of the healthcare team. Some interprofessional skills, obviously, working on IPE teams, taking leadership in those IPE teams. Some application of personalized medicine and the pharmacist as a public health educator, okay, and the pharmacy as a wellness center. I mean, that's definitely where the future lies. And the last item we discussed and reached consensus is comprehensive care management, which means, again, both the patient as well as the role that the pharmacist plays in public health and population health. So the second charge was then for us to achieve these proficiencies. What should we do in colleges and schools for education? How do we address these? Definitely need to be a shift to a learner-centered model for education, retooling our current curriculum models and teaching methods. And then the next iteration of the standards, okay, must motivate fundamental change in our educational model. And that's not exactly all we talked about. There was a lot more discussion, but that's where I'm going to end it now. We came up with three recommendations. The first one dealt with ACP standards that would be conducive to developing practice skills in our graduates. The second one was ACP should undertake a thorough review of guidelines, that's the other team, B, guideline B, C, and D, okay, to remove redundancies and to identify an appropriate balance between the acquisition of knowledge and then the application of behavioral skills for practice. And finally, ACPE should work and encourage with the academy, primarily through AACP, to charge the academy to identify those behavioral attributes that our future pharmacists require. That's my report. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Susan Meyer, and I had the pleasure of working with Group C. Could all those really collaborative and participatory people please stand? Because it was just a pleasure to work with you. Thank you. It was really remarkable, actually, as we were talking, everybody introduced themselves and sort of how they came to be here at this meeting, sort of what their professional home was. But as we began talking and continue to talk, it was very easy to forget that. So they kind of left that at the door and really were true to sort of thinking about what's best for pharmacy education and the profession. So I want to thank you for that and look forward to continuing that in our second work group conversation. We were charged with questions that were a little more focused than perhaps I would interpret A and B. So let me read them to you so you can understand sort of where our conversation was. The questions before our group were, what should be the target of PharmD programs with respect to the depth and breadth of graduates' competency, specifically for patient care? And then how should ACPE support this target in the standards and guidelines for PharmD education? And then the last and really easy question was, where should the dividing line in depth and breadth for competency and patient care be developed in the PharmD program versus residencies? So we spent about an hour of our time talking about and sorting through the information that was in the background readings and the very rich presentations and panel conversations that led up to our discussion and informed it, really talking about where consensus lies. And actually, there was a lot of consensus in our group. And what our findings were, and I'll define findings as sort of those statements of where there was consensus, that we really did see a continuum of training from entry level, and we use that that label a lot. Entry level, recognizing there was a relationship between entry level or degree-based education and then a relationship to on-the-job training, to continuing professional development, and to residency training, knowing that on-the-job training, residency training, and other kinds of things are examples of continuing professional development. And that those different levels of training result in different levels of expertise and proficiency and confidence. So as we were talking about that, there was consensus, and I think the sort of the bottom line was that PharmD graduates without additional formal training, again recognizing the role of continuing professional development and lifelong learning is important, but the graduates from PharmD programs can provide direct patient care. So as we said that, though, then we wandered into, well, we're still missing as a profession a very clear and widely understood definition of what that practice model is. One of our recommendations based on that finding is that ACP, in collaboration with practice partners, spend some time really defining that and then sticking to that definition as the standards revision and review process continues. We also talked about ways that might be achieved if the current standards or programs aren't maybe getting there yet, but that it was possible through really deliberate and analysis and perhaps revision of different components of the PharmD program, didactic and particularly the experiential learning component of the program. We spent a lot of time at first talking about depth and breadth relative to clinical expertise, because I think that's where we tend to go first, but then put on the table that it's direct patient care demands more than that. So we did say that breadth also should include very deliberate attention to the social and behavioral competencies, communication, cultural competence, and abilities to be able to participate as members of interprofessional collaborative care teams. So that was all out on the table and included in that breadth conversation. Again, recognizing depth comes after graduation in particular areas to care for very specific areas that demand, that have complexity, either complex patient populations or more complex disease states. So with all of that in the background, we came up with a few recommendations, very specific, that then flow from those findings. So again, the recommendation that ACPE, working with its partners, define direct patient care at the level of an entry-level practitioner. We had a conversation about what those of us in education will know, the prescriptiveness versus the flexibility of the standards, and we spent some time on that and really said that what is now Appendix B, recognizing that could change, that one of our recommendations was that given the breadth of required competencies, that Appendix B, or what it becomes, should be revised to reflect that needed breadth for direct patient care, but that the flexibility should come in how the standards, that the standards as written should allow for flexibility and how schools get there then. So as an example, can we be more flexible in designing our experiential learning programs, maybe more longitudinal experiences as opposed to blocks and required kinds of environments, recognizing that it would be more competency-based then. And then the expectation that the professional degree programs should very specifically should provide graduates to contribute to collaborative patient care in interprofessional teams. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Miriam Mobley-Smith, and I was a facilitator for Group D. I'd like Group D to stand. They are the most delightful, daring, determined, directed, and dedicated group of individuals I have worked with. And what does that make me? Maybe delirious. The areas of focus for our group were based in questions regarding what's the pace of the evolution of advanced practice for pharmacists. What proportion of pharmacists would be engaged in those services and providing those services in about a 10-year span of time? What type of emphasis should ACPE put on further or more comprehensive development of skills in the effective domain? And then, based on those discussions, how should we be able to guide or better guide ACPE in those particular areas? So we spent quite a bit of time in terms of discussing that globally before we came up with a set of recommendations, and so that's the way that I will approach this morning. And so I think we pretty much came to consensus that this is all over the board. Now, what do I mean by that? Basically, that in some cases, many, other times, most, and in other instances, some pharmacists are engaged in advanced primary care, whatever that is. And the reason I say that is because there was some discussion about the actual definition. In other words, we needed to have a clearer definition of when we speak about advanced primary care or patient care or direct patient care, we're all speaking the same speak. And in all cases, we should be using the same type of terminology that our other healthcare professional colleagues are using so that we all understand each other, and that helps to diminish things like turf wars and so on. And so there are pockets of excellence in the regard of providing the advanced primary care, advanced patient care, as well as areas of relative void. And so this seems to be related pretty much to the type and nature of the practice site. So the pace of the evolution of these services, as well as interprofessional patient care roles, is going to be dependent on a number of different types of factors. And I think we all know that the need, demand, systems, legislation, training, and so on, some, many of which are in our control, but some, in some cases, are not. The need is high, but the demand itself may be characterized as being low or moderate, depending on what's going on. So with that said, the pace of evolution of the advanced primary care and interprofessional patient care roles will likely be more moderate overall than rapid. Although, as you know, in some practice settings, it's already here, and it's flourishing, and in others, the question mark. And so putting a number on it was very difficult for us. We said somewhere in the 20%+ or so on of practicing pharmacists maybe in 10 years would be doing it. But on the flip side, it could be many, many more than that. So it was difficult. We know that there are disruptive innovators out there who really have shown that they've been able to get around regulatory hurdles and institutional hurdles, and good for them. And so that tells you, though, the need for more skills and learning and abilities in the effective domain, because then you're talking about things like negotiating skills and being able to work with others on teams, and not only the healthcare delivery teams, but teams of administrators, so that you can convince them, and legislators and so on, that indeed this is the direction that patient care should go. We also touched on discussions dealing with the pre-pharmacy requirements, so I was happy to hear, I'm sure all of us are happy in our group, a common thread, and I think all of you are beginning to hear some common themes based on the discussions that we've had. And so it's good to see that we have a fairly like-minded group of people in the room, even though, yes, we can have some divergent discussions, but at the end of the day, we know that our direction is pretty clear. We did also talk about the importance of role modeling, and that it'll be very difficult for our students to learn how to do it if we ourselves can't emulate those same types of behavior, skills, and competencies. So the role of faculty development is very important. Role modeling, and as our group will talk more about this morning, in terms of experiential education and the best ways to not only approach it, but from an assessment perspective, then how well our preceptors need to be able to emulate and be the appropriate role models to direct these types of changes. And so basically from our recommendations, they all really focused in this particular area to give some guidance. And so we've really been asked not to read specifically the recommendations, but certainly the areas that we focused in on happened to be advanced or to enhance education and training to position the students upon graduation whereby every or 100% of them could actually provide these advanced services irrespective of what percentage of them were actually going to be doing it at that point. Because as you're looking forward, we're not going to prepare people or not prepare them for what we want it to be and wait for it to change and then we start, but we put the framework in place in order to address it so that it can move forward when the opportunity presents itself. So pre-pharmacy requirements should be strengthened as well. The question is, of course, what percentage of that strengthening is going to occur truly in the pre-pharmacy area versus how it then integrates over into the professional program. Also in areas of longitudinal education, that the principles, competencies, and preparation should be longitudinal in these various areas throughout the program and not just in a discrete course and then you find out at the end that students have never had the opportunity to use it. And here again, from a practice site perspective, then they should be there should be practice sites and preceptors who indeed understand the concepts and have embedded it within the training of the students so that through that role modeling and they're able to better emulate what the practice should be as it's moving forward. And we did touch upon things like specialization and practice track focus. But I'm sure those will come out later as all of us continue to discuss the direction of a practice in the future. So thank you.
Good morning, all. I had the pleasure of working with Group E, and like all pharmacists, we created acronyms for Group E, and they are effective, efficient, and excellent. So would all the members of Group E please stand and be recognized? There we go. I'd like to have a shout-out also to our superscribe from ACPE staff, Mike Rouse. Mike, stand up. You did a wonderful job of making all these notes happen. Thank you, Mike. Well, our charge was to focus on curricular tracks, to focus on other non-patient care career tracks, as well as research skills. And we had three specific questions that we focused on, and I'll read the first one, and then, like Miriam, I will give you the findings and then kind of give you a general picture of what the recommendations would be, but the specific recommendations will come up later. So our first question had to do with this. To what extent, if at all, should PharmD education move toward developing explicit curricular tracks based on differentiated roles in practice? And, of course, the follow-on to that would be, what are the implications for ACPE standards and guidelines with regard to that? Well, our group had great discussion. We really did. We had some wide-ranging discussion about this particular issue. But we did find that confusion does exist with relationships to terminology around curricular tracks. We felt that there was curricular core issues in terms of definitions. We felt that schools are challenged also to get the core curriculum right. And I don't mean that we do things wrongly, but there's so much variability in what we do that needed to have some addressing as well. We also felt that curricular tracks would require specific faculty expertise, and this could be a significant challenge for the standards to address, as well as logistical concerns for the individual schools and colleges to accomplish. On the other hand, tracks that develop specific skills, and we talked about the immunization skills that many of our schools have adopted, may require additional education and training that could be awarded certificates or a certificate of accomplishment. We also felt and had a lot of discussion about electives and how electives should fit into our curricula. We felt that electives can certainly help to differentiate students and can build on existing student skills and strengths. And from those findings, our recommendations will focus on whether or not ACPE should accredit tracks and how effective ACPE should be in terms of supporting and encouraging curricular tracks. So we'll come back to those recommendations later on today. So that was the first question. The second question we addressed was this. Is there a need in pharmacy practice and in society at large for pharmacists who pursue career tracks outside of patient care, or to pursue career tracks outside of patient care? And then should PharmD education have as a goal the preparation of such pharmacists? Well, we had a lot of discussion about that, and we wound up focusing quite a bit on the dual degree issue. And so the question related to that was, what role do dual degree programs, such as a PharmD with a degree, a correlating degree in business, public health, law, informatics, have related to this issue? And then again, what are the implications for standards and guidelines in that regard? Well, our findings, and we did have rich discussion on this. This was one of the areas I think we had significant discussion in. We felt that there is a special subset of students who go into dual degree programs, not your average student in most cases. We also felt the impact of dual degree programs on the PharmD core is not adequately known. We also felt that there is a need to protect the integrity of the core in the PharmD curriculum. We felt also there is a risk that interchangeable, I'll put that in quotes, electives may not be truly interchangeable because many of our programs will substitute electives in pharmacy for electives in the degree program. And we felt there doesn't appear to be a strategic approach in our programs to the planning, implementation, and evaluation of the impact of these dual degree programs, particularly on students themselves as well as the profession at large. And that also related to our feeling that there is a lack of metrics to monitor and evaluate outcomes and the impact of dual degree programs. So with those findings, our recommendations will focus around how we feel ACPE should evaluate these programs as it relates to PharmD competencies. The third question and the last question that we addressed is a theme, and then I'll give you the question. The theme was, among disciplines that offer a professional doctoral degree, pharmacy is notable in not requiring a research project as an exercise in developing critical thinking skills. We also noted that some colleges and schools do have this as a requirement. The question is, should ACPE require more systematic involvement of pharmacy students in conducting research? And if so, what should be the nature of this requirement? Well, we had a good discussion around this one as well. And the group felt that we do recognize the importance of developing skills related to research methods and design, scientific, scholarly, reflective, critical thinking, and the evaluation of literature and the use of data in related areas. So we recognize the importance of having those things in our curriculum. Requiring all students to complete a research project, the group felt would probably be unrealistic in terms of the faculty resources necessary to support this kind of an exercise. We did feel as a group that there is a greater need and a greater emphasis on development of skills related to literature evaluation, critical and reflective thinking, as I just noted in my other comments. And this was also pointed out in the survey results that we had in our background information. We felt that there's a risk that requiring a research project would result potentially in a checklist approach and simplistic projects. And I think in some cases now, I think we see that particular thing happening in our programs today. So we had a lot of discussion then around the research project being an optional process in our schools and colleges, and our recommendations later on will focus on that issue. So thank you very much.